on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is May 15th, 2015. 5-15-15. Interesting. We've spent another week at the end of, you know, it's an interesting year so far in the stock market. And as you know, after every on every Friday, we publish our premium newsletter, and I attempt to capitalize the week's financial news. This week, in the market condition summary, I mentioned a number of economic reports, but the one that was most disturbing this week that I wrote about was the retail sales number, because it was kind of down. It was not very good. I mean, last month I think retail sales were up 1.1%. A month ago, and now it's only up 0.2%. And that's for April. Remember the weak first quarter, you're supposed to have a rebound in the second quarter. So far, no evidence of it. But there's also reason to be optimistic. There was a little bit of optimistic. Why? The stock market itself is a leading economic indicator, and it hasn't fallen. All this bad news still hasn't fallen. So I also, in that same section in the premium newsletter, I talk about KPP Financial and our response to what's happening in the market. Then, of course, there's the... I always have a couple of stock ideas in the newsletter. It's always right there. One was a transportation stock this week. We also think it's important for subscribers to know a little bit about how to manage a portfolio if they want to do it themselves. So we talked about the benefits of emerging markets and for diversification. That's what was in the week. And the Consumer Watch, we were talking about water management, Wi-Fi controlled water management devices. For those people in California, you know, that's pretty important. So if you'd like to subscribe, you can do so. It's very easy. It's $9.99 a month. It comes out every week. You don't have to pay a year in advance if you don't want to. You can pay a month to month, and you can cancel anytime you want. So we're here to answer your questions. So let's get to it. If you want to subscribe, you just go to investtalk.com, by the way. You can subscribe right on our website. So we're open to any money questions. Our number is 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime you want. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, so we're live right now. And we can have a conversation. But let's go ahead and take this first question from our 24-hour listener line.
Good afternoon. My name's Joe. I'm a podcast listener and very much enjoy your show. Had a question. My parents, they're in their 80s. They're selling their home. And so they're going to be having a large sum of money, at least for them. About $100,000, actually, and was kind of wondering if they're going to be needing that money to live in their duplex, but it's what might be a good thing to put that money in where it can draw more than just interest in a savings account, but still be, I guess, fairly accessible. I'll be listening to podcasts. I would appreciate hearing your answer. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question, but this is exactly the problem we're having in today's current economic environment. The Federal Reserve has made sure that older people, like your parents, who want to put money away safely because they're going to need it and make a little bit of interest, they have made sure you can't do that. You can't make some interest safely. It's not possible. There's no place to put it. You put it in a money market or CD, you get hardly any return. You get less return than inflation. So it has driven people up the risk ladder. So what do you do? Maybe I'll buy some bonds, some corporate bonds. Maybe I'll buy some big blue chip dividend paying stocks. And that's what people have done the last couple of years. And it's been beneficial for them, but many people cannot take the loss because it's risky. The market goes in both directions. So there really is nowhere for your parents to go to have the access to the money they want, the liquidity, and not take a lot of risk and still get a decent return. The decent return part is impossible. You can all you take very little risk by going to CD or money market. There's no risk virtually at all there. It's SIPC bank. But you get no return. So there is no answer for you. I mean, there's no answer for your parents. There's no, you know, there's no combination of safety, liquidity, and a decent return. There isn't. And that's unfortunate. It's very disappointing. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what is on your mind? What do you guys want to discuss out there? Whatever it is on your mind financially, we'll be happy to talk about. The market today, you know, after a pretty good-sized day yesterday, the market today was up on the Dow 20, down on the NASDAQ 3, and up on the S&P 2. So a mixed day, not much happening. It was mostly down for the day, but not severely. But that's what the market did today. And we're going to talk today, easy steps for building a bond ladder. Now, I've talked about bond ladders, and we have a program called our income balanced income portfolio that we take half of the portfolio and build a bond ladder, and the other half buy high dividend paying equities of some kind. So we're going to talk about building a bond ladder. Also, shouldn't the market already have fallen? And I want to talk about why that should be and why maybe that's bullish. Warren Buffett increases his holdings in a few stocks. Did you see that? It was released. He has to, Berkshire Hathaway has to release that information. Do you know which stocks he added to? Do you know there's four stocks that represent the bulk of his holdings? Did you know that? Just four stocks. He has over 80 stocks, but only four represent the bulk. Let's talk about that. And the dollar has been weakening for five straight weeks. I think that's good news. Some people will think it's not, but I think it's good news. And maybe we'll discuss why I think that. And those are the things that I would like to discuss today on this show. But, of course, it's what's on your mind that's important. Not what's on my mind. What do you want to talk about? When you're an InvestTalk Insider, when you are, there's opportunities to learn a bunch of stuff with concise, simplified reports that we have there, written personally by me and Justin. Important topics, annuities, wills, trust, retirement programs, life insurance. There's an updated ETF list and much more. So if you want it, you can sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. It's free. Sign up at InvestTalk.com. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Robbie in Santa Clara. How are you doing, Robbie?
Hi. I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I would like to know the prospects of the two funds which I want to invest via my 401k. The first is the first fund code is Fidelity Contra Fund, which is nothing but F for Frank, T right. for Charlie, N for Nancy, T for Tom, X for X-ray.
Right.
Another fund is Vanguard Total Stock Market Admiral Index Fund. That is nothing but V for Vanguard.
Right.
T for Tom, S for Sam, A for Adams, X for X-ray.
Now, what do you want to know about these two funds?
Sorry?
What do you want to know about these two funds?
Yeah, I would like to know the how good is this and whether I can invest at this time or not. Is there any right time to invest in this?
Okay, so both of them, both funds are very, very large. One's fallen, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index has fallen the entire market, and the other one is so large that they own almost the big swath of the market. So there's not a lot of difference in either one of them as far as, well, which one should I be? Is one better than the other? One is an index, it's non-managed. One is a managed fund. The Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund is not managed by anybody. They just track the index, all the stocks in the market. And your question really goes to, well, is the market going to rally further or is it going to pull back? Is it a good time to be in the market? And to be honest, I think that, you know, you probably should err on the side of being in the market than being out of the market. Having said that, Robbie, I do think the market's probably going to correct this summer sometime. There will be a correction. And it would be very nice if you could buy after the correction because then you won't lose money. So I would probably take a dollar cost average approach investing in these two funds. In other words, buy a little bit every couple weeks So if the market goes down, you're getting them at cheaper prices and averaging your price down. If the market goes up, at least you're participating with some of your investments. That would be my suggestion. Okay? Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That was VTSAX. What's the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index? And then Vanguard is the cheapest fund family. When I say cheapest, I mean they charge the least amount of expense ratio, which is very good. You want that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you know what a bond ladder is? A bond ladder? Okay. It's a way, it's a method of investing in bonds to try to maximize your yield over time. Okay? That's the goal. You're maximizing your yield over time by buying bonds. So you have a bond that comes due, let's say, 6 months. You have another bond that comes due in a year. Another bond, maybe 18 months, 24 months, blah, 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 out to however long you think you want to go. And what happens is when the bond comes due, you then go out to the longest rung, how furthest out you want to be, reinvest it. Because your hope is interest rates will rise and you'll get better returns. The longer the bond, the better. But you always have bonds coming due every so often so you can take advantage of a rising interest rate environment. In a rising interest rate environment, you want to start off with a short ladder. For instance, in my ladder in the Balanced Income Fund, we're not going out more than about 4 years. When interest rates are high, you want to go out a very long ladder because you get better yields. Short ladder because you want to, you want to take advantage of rising yields, and then you start stretching it out further and further and further as the yields rise. But once they're really, once the yields are high, you want to just keep your very few rungs very long out, so that you can maximize your money. But then you got to always keep in mind that maybe you'll need some of that money. Always got to keep that in mind. But see, it's okay to have long-term bonds when interest rates are very high, because if you needed money, you could sell the bond and you probably get to sell it at a profit. Okay, I probably opened up another can of worms, because when bonds go up and down in value, so if you had a 10-year bond and interest rates were rising, the value of that bond would go down because you can buy a new 10-year bond with a higher yield. But if interest rates are really high and you have a 10-year bond and they start to fall, everybody's going to want your bond at that high yield that you're getting because interest rates are falling. Now they have to buy a 10-year bond with lower yield, so that your bond that is 10 years with a high yield, they'll pay more for it than what you bought it for. Interest rates make bond values go up and down. If you buy a bond today at $10,000, that's par value. You hold it for 10 years, and you'll get your $10,000 back, plus interest over the years. But during that period of time, over those 10 years, that value of $10,000 is going to go up or down depending on what interest rates are doing. Eventually, they'll go back to par at $10,000 when it matures. But in between times, it will fluctuate in value. You can sell it in between times. You don't have to wait for maturity. You don't have to. Now, in my bond ladder, in my balanced income fund, I do hold all the bonds to maturity. I don't trade them. I'm trying to collect and earn the yield. That's what I want. So why wonder? Why not know what your risk tolerance is? That's one way. We have a piece of software that can do that for you. Created by Nobel Prize winning designer. It's free. It's called a free risk analysis tool that we have on investtalk.com. It asks a few questions of you about risk and your tolerance for risk. And it's all about, would you risk 10% to make 20% over the next 6 months? Or would you rather take less risk than that to make less money? And it asks a series of questions that way, and it kind of judges your personal risk tolerance. And you can go to investtalk.com and take, it's free. Gives you a risk score between 0 and 100. Pretty interesting. Try it on investtalk.com.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. And coming up on the next Invest Talk, most of the really big winners on Wall Street list themselves as traders. Investor or trader? Which are you? That's our talking point for Monday, May 18th. Please join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Don't save your questions. If you have one, just give me a call. And it doesn't matter, beginner or experience, it doesn't matter how simple the question is. A lot of people out there would ask it. Trust me. They want to know the answers just like you do. So it's for beginner and experienced investors, okay? Give me a call.
Hi, this is Dan in Roanoke, Virginia. I'm a podcast listener. What is meant when they talk about the Dow fair value and the Dow futures? I'm just curious what exactly that means and what makes up those numbers or what factors go into determining those numbers. Thanks a lot. I'll wait for your answers on the podcast.
Well, that's more difficult to answer than you would believe. The futures is all about what the market is going to be or what's it worth in the future, okay? And the futures contracts is what people think it's going to be. You know, when someone comes out with what's the fair value of the market or fair value of the Dow or the S&P, whenever you hear that term, fair value, you have to understand what their definition is because there is no official definition. Everybody has their own definition of what fair value is. I can tell you that the S&P 500 average P/E ratio is 15 approximately over long periods of time. And if we take the earnings that the S&P made this year and say, okay, this is how much earnings it made, and here's the S&P 500 average P/E, this is the fair value it should be. And what is it trading at? Over, below, or above that? Okay, and that you can use that as what's the fair value. And you can use that for any sector, any stock, over, on and on and on. But what is the fair value? I also can tell you that the average P/E for the S&P 500 being 15 is influenced by inflation. When there is very low periods of inflation, usually the S&P trades at a higher P/E ratio. And when there's a high inflationary period, it trades at a lower P/E ratio. I mean, you could say that because you look at history and you can tell. These are all things that make up, well, what's the fair value of something? And you know people call me and ask me, what's the fair value of a particular stock? Well, what industry is it? What sector? What drives the P/E ratio, the price-earnings ratio, and drives the price of a stock for that particular sector? And then, for that particular stock, what is its earnings growth and sales growth and debt level? I wish it was simple. I really do. But it's not. Let's go to Stefan and Hollister. Stefan, you're spelling your name. Save my I spell mine. How you doing? I'm Stefan, too.
Good. Thanks. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
I have a question regarding COW, Cow. I would like to diversify my portfolio, and I was interested in your thoughts about investing in livestock.
Okay, this is a very good diversifier because you're diversifying. This is okay. Cows, COW, Barclays iPath Livestock, ETN, exchange traded note corresponding to the Dow Jones Livestock Table Return Sub Index. So you're investing in an index of livestock, and of course that's not related to the stock market, is it? So it's very well diversed away from the stock market, and it's a smart thing to do if you feel this sector is going to do well. And looking at a chart, it looks like it's definitely hit bottomed, Stefan. So, and it's coming off that bottom nicely. So I actually think this is probably a pretty good investment, to be honest. Okay?
Great.
Appreciate the
Thank
call.
Thank you.
COW, everybody. Cow. Kind of a neat symbol. But it's a livestock, and if you've been paying attention, you know, food prices have been pretty low, but they seem, remember how they really reduced all the herds in the Midwest a couple years ago because they had more than they need? Well, now it's on the other end. Now they got to expand those herds. That's how it works. Now, shouldn't the market already have fallen? Shouldn't it? I mean, you're talking about a GDP first quarter was almost flat. It's probably going to be revised to show negative. You're talking about retail sales in the most recent month, not very good. You're talking about industrial production that's still shrinking, and it's been shrinking for 4 or 5 months in a row. There's nothing out there that you would think that would hold the market up, and yet here we are knocking on the door at new highs. Now, for all year, the market has been pretty much traded in a range. So we've had all this bad news for this whole year so far, and the market hasn't really gone down. That in itself, to me, is bullish. That's bullish. Not bearish, bullish. Remember, the market is a leading economic indicator. I think the market's telling us that the economy is going to rebound. I think that's what it's saying. Also, you know who the AAII is, American Association of Independent Investors? They do surveys for them, and it's really interesting. They are right now 26.7% bullish. That's the bullish sentiment. 26.7% of them are bullish. That is the lowest it's been in 2 years. So what does that tell you? Probably everybody who wants out of the market, we're pretty much out of the market. That means it's kind of a contrarian indicator. That means the money is sitting on the sidelines that apparently someday will come back. All we need is some good news, and maybe we'll see market next rally up. Might have a correction in between. That's why I'm kind of saying any correction is one to be bought, not sold. A question we often get on InvestTalk is, what type of life insurance is best for you? Well, I have a comparison. We're going to talk about it on InvestTalk Personal here. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and I hope you can stay with us. You're listening to InvestTalk. Okay, let's get back to our listener line, 888-99-CHART. Here's a call that came in earlier.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Frank calling from Walnut Creek, and I'm calling about a company called FMC Technology. Its symbol is Frank Thomas India, FTI. And I'd like to, if you would, take a look at the company and tell me what you think about it and its prospects and if it's a good buy at this point. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, FMC Technologies, FTI is the symbol. It's out of Houston, Texas. Designs, manufactures, services, systems, and products for land and offshore exploration and production of oil and gas. So it's in the oil and gas area. And, of course, earnings have fallen 11% this year, and they're going to fall 11% next year. Sales have fallen from growing 11 to 20%. Now this most recent quarter fell 7%. So it's been beat up, right? And so the stock has been beat up. It was at $60 last year. I mean, I think it got to 63 at the very top last year. And today it's at 41.50. It's got as low as about $36, $37 a share. And that was its low point in March. I think that is probably hit a bottom. I do. I think at $2.27 worth of earnings, which is going to be less than the $2.88 it was last year, but next year it's going to be $2.27, and it's a $41 stock. Well, it's not unreasonably priced at this range. I think this might be the bottom. If oil prices stabilize and continue rising like they have, you know, there was an article I read today about shale production and about someone in the oil field area was talking about that shale production is going to start increasing if the price approaches $70 a barrel. It'll start increasing again. So that's what you have to look at. Do you think oil is going to go up to $70 a barrel? And if you say yes to that, if you say yes, then you want to be an investor in this and other oil stocks. I think it has bottom, to be perfectly honest. I wouldn't be in a rush to buy it, because I think we will get a correction, but it's got really good numbers. Return on equity is 29%, good cash flow. Management owns hardly anything, but you know, not much debt. I kind of like it. Okay, 888-99-CHARGE is our number, 888-992-4278. Time for InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day personal financial decisions that impact everybody's lives. And we're going to talk about life insurance this time. There's three basic kinds of life insurance. The first one is the one I like and I recommend is term life. Term life. And term life is a contract. Remember, these are insurance contracts. People talk about insurance policies like, you know, everybody knows what that means. These are complex contracts between you and the insurance company, and the insurance company wrote them. Do you think it's all to your benefit? No. But the simplest one is term life. And term life is for a specific time period, a term. It starts here, ends here. The policy expires. The face amount or payment is on upon death. That's the face amount. You buy term life, $100,000, $1 million. I'm going to get $1 million on my death. The premium is for a set period and is stable, same premium, for that term. And then when the term expires, it's done. You don't die within that period. You get nothing. You gave them the policy, the premium, and usually the premium is very, very low. The next one is whole life. Provides lifetime benefits. There is no period of expiration. The premium is usually a level premium, and it's for life, usually. And a whole life gathers value over time. And you can borrow the money out of that if you want to. And when you can cancel it, and you'll get the money, and the premium's a lot more. Universal life is more of the more modern version of whole life, in that you then, in the universal life, you can invest in stock market, in index funds, or in it tries to act like an investment. That's what it tries to do. Both the premiums of whole life and universal life are much, much higher than the term life. I don't like buying insurance policies that act like an investment. I think you should buy an investment, not an insurance policy that acts like an investment. I'd rather see you buy term life with a very small premium, take the difference of the premium, start investing that in the stock market, S&P 500, and you'll make a lot more money over time. Do you have questions about life insurance? Give me a call or send me a note. Go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. That's an email that comes directly to me. And that's InvestTalk Personal for today. If you have any questions on any money matters, time to check in now at 888-99-CHART.
Global Value Investing, finding opportunities in foreign, domestic, and emerging markets. Our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference is now an hour-long webinar scheduled for June 4th. And during this session, you'll learn about ADRs, American Depository Receipts, which are a means to trade foreign stocks on U.S. exchanges. And Steve and Justin will share an ETF list of foreign markets, too. There'll be plenty of time for your questions also. Again, it's June 4th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free, but you do need to register. You can do that right now on investtalk.com.
Hello, this is Steve. I'm listening to you on the podcast, and I want to know a valuation for Taser International, ticker symbol TASR. I haven't got a position yet, but I would like to take one. I was wondering whether you could give me price point and also maybe outlook for the industry, Taser International. Thank you again for your very valuable program. Bye-bye.
Taser International, TASR. If you haven't heard what a Taser is, you've been living in a cave somewhere. They make those things you shoot at people, and it disables them. Okay, this stock is very, very overvalued. You do not buy it here. It's too expensive. They're going to make 52 cents a share this year, 62 cents a share next year. Sales growth is very nice, in the low 20s on average, and that's why it's very overpriced. The PE right now is 78. They're going to make 62 cents next year, and the stock is $32 or $33 a share. Well, wait a minute. That's about a 60 PE. No. You know, if you have a growth rate in the 20s, I would not rather pay more than a 20 PE. I think my value in this is like around $25 a share, and it's at 33. I would wait for it to pull down into the low 20s, high teens to be a buyer of it. It may not get there. It may never pull back there. Return on equity is pretty decent at 17%. Management owns about 5%. Mutual funds have been net buyers over the last year, so they're pushing the stock up. It has pretty good numbers, no debt. I mean, the numbers are really good. It's a really solid company. It's just expensive. And I don't think I'd want to overpay for this stock. It's not the kind of stock I'm comfortable with paying up for, because I don't know how long they can maintain that growth rate. I don't know if they have any competition either. I don't think they do, but I'd have to look into that carefully before I buy. Good company, just expensive. Warren Buffett increased his holdings in several stocks, but Two in particular. He increased it by 2% in Wells Fargo and 3% in IBM. Now, IBM, to me, was a surprise buy for Warren Buffett in the first place because he swore that he'll never buy a tech company. And what do you think IBM is? Now, he may argue it's a service company, but it's in the tech industry. You know, and they sell computers. But increased 2% at Wells Fargo and 3%. They have to, Berkshire Hathaway has to divulge its information every quarter. Okay, they also boosted U.S. Bank Core. But you know, there's four stocks in Berkshire Hathaway that dominate the holdings of Berkshire Hathaway. And they are Wells Fargo, IBM, Coca-Cola, and American Express. When I say dominate, I'm saying they're over 50% of the overall holdings. 50%. 5-0. Berkshire Hathaway owns over 80 companies. But with that high concentration, anything goes wrong with one of these four, they got problems. They're not going to make money. Not. And don't think he doesn't sell. He does sell. He sells, you know, those 80 companies out there. He doesn't hold on to them. He might be buy. He likes to buy and hold. That's his philosophy. But he sells companies. Don't think he doesn't. He does. But I thought you'd find it interesting that he increased his holdings in Wells Fargo and IBM, and U.S. Bank Corp too. You know, he's a smart fella. You don't want to argue with him. Don't argue with him. Now let's get back to work answering your questions. Our 24-hour listener line is 888-99-CHART, and we'll answer your question on the very next program.
Hi, my name is John, and I'm just asking a question about gold investment. When you buy gold, are you paying a commission in the price? And when you sell gold, do you have to pay a tax on the income that you make if you sell at a higher price? Thank you very much.
Okay, if you buy gold in the form of bars or coins, yeah, you're paying a commission. You're also paying a commission when you sell it. So you're paying more than the actual gold is worth. Now, that if you're just buying the gold content and you're not buying anything for, you know, an old gold coin that has value because it's old, we're just not talking about that. We're just talking about the value of gold. If you bought gold at $1,000 an ounce and you sold it at $2,000 an ounce, you have a capital gains of $1,000 and you will own capital gain tax on your profit. Yes. You will own it. So if you go out and buy gold from somebody and you go out and sell it back to somebody else a year later and made a profit on it, technically you're supposed to pay capital gains tax on that money. Anything over a year would be at the capital gains rate of, 20% now? And anything under a year will be at the rate of your ordinary income tax rate, short-term versus long-term capital gains, just like when you buy and sell stocks. If you buy gold and hold it somehow in your IRA, you wouldn't have to pay capital gains tax. But if you're buying the physical gold that you're actually holding on to, well, you can't do that in an IRA. So, not in that sense. You could buy gold ETF, exchange traded fund, that actually owns gold, so you own a part of that gold in the exchange traded fund. Good question, though. Very good question. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Dollar has weakened. The U.S. dollar has weakened for 5 straight weeks. The euro has increased in value. Now, why is the dollar weakening? Remember, it got really strong last year. Why? Because the Federal Reserve stopped QE, and now, beginning of this year, all the other countries in the world increasing their QE or starting QE. So it makes their economies, and their economies are much weaker than our economy, okay? And especially last year. This year, our economy is not nearly as strong. And look what's happened to the dollar. This year, the EU, looks like it's gaining some economic strength, getting off the floor. Not by much, but better than it was because their QE might be working a bit. So the dollar has fallen. Now, one of the reasons why our first quarter GDP was so poor is because our exports only increased by 9%, while imports increased like 7 or 8%. And the more imports you have, if you have more imports than exports, that detracts from GDP. Well, why do we have more imports? Well, because our dollar was so high. Those imports are a lot cheaper. Our exports are more expensive to the foreigners when we try to sell them stuff. Now that the dollar is falling, maybe we can stop and reverse a little bit of that. That's why when you're trading currencies, you have to pay attention to the international markets and what's in economies everywhere. You just can't pay attention to the United States. You got to be aware of what's going on everywhere. So I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, one of the reasons why our oil prices went down so sharply is because the dollar increased. And so now oil's starting to go up. Part of the reason because oil is now going up because the dollar has gone down. And this only will benefit our oil industry, our shale oil industry in the Midwest. Now, it has not been so far, but it could. See, the rising and falling of the dollar is pretty darn important to our economy overall. And it's going to hurt and help different sectors. Now, if you're going to ask me, well, was it better that the dollar be low or high? I probably will come on the side of the dollar being high, not low, because it helps the consumers the most, and our economy is driven by consumers. I want lower oil prices. I want cheap products that consumers buy, so they will buy them. They will spend the money. You know, it helps consumers. But, you know, on the other hand, we also want to have a strong job market. We want to have industries that are growing and strengthening, not weakening. And a higher dollar can hurt a lot of our international companies. And you don't want them to lay off people, do you? I don't. We're coming up on the last segment of the program. You can call us now at 888-99-CHART. Let's get your voice in on the show. I would love to hear what you have on your mind. 888-992-4278. We're open for your comments or questions. Same number all the time. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-992-4278.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Steve and Justin are happy to announce that we're nearing 4 million downloads of our daily podcast. Why not tell a friend and help us hit that mark? And thanks again for subscribing.
Vic, thank you for holding on. Vic, are you there?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yes, I had a question about ETF. Although ETF is traded during the market, but there is one called ETFS. I mean, not ETFS, but ETMF, Exchange Traded Mutual Fund. Have you heard anything about that?
Exchange Traded Mutual Fund. Well, ETFs are a type of mutual fund. Don't think they're not. They're just, you know, traded every day. So I'm wondering if they use that terminology to be more descriptive of what the ETF is. But no, I have not heard.
I was reading the article, but they said the thing is about the ET, the mutual fund, is usually the net asset value decided after the market is closed.
Right.
But this one is you can trade like an ETF, basically.
Well, I don't doubt that that's coming down the road, because I mentioned before that I think the next big move toward ETFs is probably managed ETFs, because most ETFs are not managed. Almost all of them are not managed at all. They hold groups of stocks or indexes or certain sectors or whatever. And maybe that's how they're going to describe the next group of ETFs, ETFs mutual funds, where they're managed by a fund manager. I have not heard that term, though, to be honest.
How would they decide the net asset value if you trade during the market?
I don't think it would be impossible because, remember, it's just, you know, if he's a mutual fund, if he's a manager, he can buy and sell stocks during the day, and you still could do it with these day and age with computers. You could figure out how much his value is at that time. But, you know, it would be very much more difficult. I'll say that for Vic. It would be something
so Does that mean you are betting on a net asset value then? Is that how it is?
Yeah, you are. Maybe they're closed-end funds too, which you don't know. Versus open-end ETFs are usually open-end, meaning that they trade at the net asset value all the time. But not that many years ago, you couldn't have an ETF that you could trade intraday because you couldn't keep track of the values intraday because it's. What if they hold 200 stocks and S&P 500 ETF, for instance, 500 stocks? They got to track the net asset value of that every second of every day. You can see how difficult that would get.
That's true.
So I don't know. I've never heard that term, Vic. So I really don't know. I'm going to look it up and see if I can find some information.
Yeah, they said that was about 8 or 9, but it's not trading yet. But I think they are working on it. I guess.
I have a feeling, Vic. I have a feeling it's a managed fund. By a manager. Interesting. Okay. I'll look it up. Thanks for the call. Good question. Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Yesterday, we didn't get to it, but I wanted to talk about yesterday about Social Security, rules to maximize your Social Security. There's one basic, simple rule. Be patient. Don't take it early. If you take it early, you're going to take a 30% haircut on the monthly benefits. Do you want to do that? If you take it late, if you wait till you're 70, between the ages of 66 or 67 and 70, you get 8% increase per year of your benefits. So if you can collect later, that's the smartest thing to do. Now, there are reasons to collect earlier. Major reason being you need the money. But make sure it's a need, not a want. Other reasons that you might collect early, your health. Maybe you have bad health. Maybe, you might as well start collecting early. You might not live long enough. But other things about maximizing your Social Security, there's a book called Get What's Yours. It's a very good book. I've read it, most of it. Very good book. It's all about Social Security benefits. And one of the key things they bring up in that book, and that hardly anybody knows about, is spousal benefits. Collecting spousal benefits. If your wife or husband and you both work, and your wife or husband can file and suspend benefits, and you as a spouse can claim spousal benefits while your spouse gets that 8% a year increase until they're 70. And you can collect spousal benefits between retirement age and 70. Most people don't even know that. Check it out. And don't forget survival benefits, child benefits. There's the complex rules. You got to figure them out. Before we close for the hour, if you'd like to hear this InvestTalk episode again, you can. You can go to InvestTalk.com and play any of the past 10 programs. Or you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, where we're coming up on, 4 million downloads? I think we're already surpassed that. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.